This is Sea Change Radio, covering the shift to sustainability. I'm Alex Wise.
When we think about the sheer amount that is needed and the fact that no existing technologies are able to close this gap, it is a massive, massive copper deficit that we're facing.
As with oil and gas, the extraction of minerals and metals from the earth has been a necessary evil in the industrialization of humankind. The environmental destruction and human rights abuses of the mining industry are well documented. This week's guest on Sea Change Radio runs a company that partners with mining corporations to make the mining itself more resource efficient. Liz Dennett is the CEO and founder of Endolith, a Colorado-based startup company that uses microbes to improve the efficacy of copper and lithium extraction. We learn about the science behind Endolith's technology, talk about the environmental impacts and challenges of metal and mineral mining, and discuss whether there's a moral quandary in doing business with these big, often nefarious companies. I'm joined now on Sea Change Radio by Liz Dennett. She's the founder and CEO of Endolith. Liz, welcome to Sea Change Radio.
It is such an honor to be here. Thank you for having me.
So explain the value proposition of Endolith. Your company does something which most people have never heard of. So why don't you unpack what you do and how you're trying to change the mining industry?
It's true. We use microbes, nature's oldest miners, to recover copper from ores that would otherwise be left behind. And if that sounds a little bit like science fiction, or that sounds like something a little bit out there, it's true. But it's something that we are doing today to get more copper out to help feed the clean energy transition.
Well, what does that mean, copper from ores? Just from the chemistry of that, explain what that means.
So every time you turn on a light switch, you are channeling electrons into copper wire. And that copper is something that our human ancestors have been using ever since the Bronze Age. The reality is between now and 2050, us as humans are going to need double the amount of copper we've ever needed. And to get to that copper, there's not much left on Earth. Most of the copper ores that are left are considered very low quality or very low grade. If you are a geology nerd like I happen to be, I have a PhD in astrobiology where I worked for NASA. These are minerals like chalcopyrite or energite or tenantite. So they have less than a fraction of 1% of copper. And right now, nothing can get to that copper. It is inaccessible. And we are using microbes to get that copper into the global energy landscape.
And at what point in the extraction process do these microbes play a part?
To extract copper from these low-grade ores, there's a process called hydrometallurgy. And essentially what you do is you take these rocks, you crush them into these giant pyramids, and you use sprinkler systems that right now spray on pretty harsh acids, things like sulfuric acid, pH 1, pH 2. If you touched it, it would burn your hand. Do not touch it. It's very dangerous. And so we take those systems that are already out there all over the world, and we put microbes into that sulfuric acid. These little microbial warriors go out, and instead of relying on just the harsh acids, those microbes can liberate the copper from the rock. There's a few reasons they can do that, but mostly because they've been around for billions of years and have a lot of metabolic superpowers.
So this is a process that would be added on to the normal mining process, or is it discrete? Is it a different process altogether?
We are able to plug and play with existing mines to get more copper into the landscape today. Those microbes can then eliminate the need for sulfuric acid, and that can reduce the risk for things like water contamination in some of these frontline communities. Also, right now, less than half of that copper is typically recovered. Our lab tests are showing we can get 80 or 90% of that copper. The more copper we get out, the fewer mines and the less potential acid mine drainage.
Yes, this is one of the biggest sustainability issues with the copper mining industry is tailings, right? Why don't you expand on that if you can?
Yeah. So right now, after they have these massive piles of rock where they crush them, they extract them, as I mentioned, they only get about half the copper out. There's a few reasons for that, that if you ever want a cure for your insomnia, you can give me a call and I will go on and on about the mechanism of electron transfer and microbes and superficial reactions. But essentially what happens is those copper atoms get sequestered away. And then mining companies have a responsibility to communities to return the land to a state that it can be used. So those ores then turn into tailings and they have to be returned to a state that causes minimal environmental harm. But there can still be things like acid mine drainage that could be a potential liability because these microbes and these deposits have had billions of years to evolve on Earth and life tends to find a way. So by using the microbes to get more copper out, we mitigate a lot of the risks in the downstream tailings.
And can it also be used with extracted copper, or is it only the copper that do the microbes really only, are they only effective in extracting copper from rock? Like, can you do anything with existing copper that's like in like if we went down to Lowe's or Home Depot and got some copper, could your microbes work in any way? Is it just purely in the extraction process?
Well, these microbes are specifically designed for these low-grade heap leaches. But microbes have been mining metals from rock long before we have. They have been on this planet for billions of years, and we're helping them to do it more efficiently in very, very specific environments. We have a few unique tools in our toolkit, things like adaptive laboratory evolution, biological optimization, biological intelligence. We're using the cloud. We're using AI to make these microbes little mining machines. If you tried to grow them in any other environment, they would sadly, or better, they would not grow because they're very, very specialized.
What is biological intelligence, Liz?
So at Endolith, we're using biological intelligence. It does sound very science fiction. It is the best way I can describe what we're building here at Endolith. It's not traditional mining. It's not traditional biotech. We're using these living systems that are guided by AI to solve resource challenges at scale, essentially. It's where the industrial biotechnology meets genomics, meets the cloud computing optimization pieces.
So your business model is to partner with miners, I'm imagining, and offer your microbial services to them as like an add-on to make their process more effective. Is that a fair characterization?
We partner with mining companies like BHP, like Rio Tinto, to get more copper out of these existing deposits for a number of reasons. The microbial bioleaching that we're talking about, it is not new. As I mentioned, these microbes have been around Earth long before humans, but we are using real-time optimization. So we have a platform where we can bring all this data into the cloud. We can make sure we have the right microbes at the right time, and that enables us to have a scalable platform. By extracting more microbes from these heaps, we're able to ultimately minimize the number of mines that are needed and able to meet this massively growing demand for copper. Copper is in everything. And when we think about the clean energy economy, electric vehicles have 4 to 5 times more copper than internal combustion engines. Wind turbines have 4 to 5 tons of copper per turbine. The demand for copper is absolutely exploding over the next 15, 20 years.
And you say that the amount of mineable copper is diminishing significantly on Earth. Can you give us a snapshot of how scarce this is? Is this like a new thing, or is this something that we knew was coming around the bend for years? And that's why you see people stealing copper from abandoned homes and things like that.
One of my favorite examples of this is I was recently at a museum and I was walking through these beautiful artifacts from the Bronze Age. And it hit me that bronze is copper. Our ancestors have been using copper for thousands and thousands of years. So imagine your ancestors' ancestors going through and finding these copper deposits. And humans have a lot of ingenuity. So these easy-to-get-to copper deposits, when we had prehistory and early technologies, they've been used. the things that we have left in terms of deposits are really what is left after thousands and thousands and thousands of years. The demand for copper is not new, but the pace of demand is increasing. Things like generative AI, LLMs, those require a lot of energy. And that energy, every time you're using electricity, it travels down a copper superhighway. So as we continue to accelerate the pace of our innovation, copper is really the backbone of all of it.
Just a slice of copper moon over the ocean, ocean blue, to hear my one and only tune. Strike a chord that brings me to you.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio, and I'm speaking to Liz Dennett. She is the CEO and founder of Endolith. So Liz, Endolith is a small startup. Your staff is 60% female. You mentioned how you partner with these larger mining companies like BHP and Rio Tinto. Why can't they do what you do with all of their resources? Do you have like a patented process that they need to pay you for, or is this something replicable?
The ability of microbes to facilitate copper is something that, honestly, we have a team of experts in. My PhD is in astrobiology, where I actually looked at how microbes can oxidize and reduce iron and copper and sulfur. Our team here, as you teed up, we're 60% female. We're a bunch of super nerdy scientists and engineers, yet we don't own mines. We have no desire to own and operate mines. What we do want to do is know more about microbes and microbial metabolisms than anyone else on the history of the planet. I've spent a few years, to be delicate, in my career building cloud-native platforms and looking at how, in addition to this copper we're talking about in rocks and copper powering the cloud, how we can use algorithms to really see DNA backbones and how energy travels. And so we have a really unique ecosystem of team members who we want to be the nerdy microbial whisperers that can harness biology and really bring it to scale with mining companies who know how to do it and can scale it much better than we can.
But why can't these mining companies just have their own microbial platform or spray that they can use to extract more copper in their process? How does Endolith insert itself as a must-have for these miners?
Yeah, so one thing we do is these microbes aren't just a one-and-done solution. We're not taking this one magic microbe we found and pouring it on these heap leaches. They really are this natural extraction engine. We use AI to guide and optimize their performance in real time, which means that as these heaps evolve and as they change, we can focus on being the microbe whisperers, on figuring out how these bugs can change and get the most copper out. And mining customers can focus on what they're the experts in, which is safely and effectively operating mine sites all over the world.
Well, let's turn to that, because they don't always safely and effectively mine things. Anybody who is involved in environmental issues and sustainability issues has inevitably read about some of the distasteful practices from the mining industry. You're a progressive female-owned company, as you mentioned. Partnering with these behemoths of the industry must be tricky at times. Why don't you explain that balance that you're trying to find in terms of keeping close to your core values as a company?
I love working with mining companies, and I live in Denver. I have said this to friends and they have rolled their eyes. They've made fake gagging noises and they have said, "What is wrong with you, Liz? Like, you are a scientist, you're an Alaskan. What is wrong with you?" And the reality is if you think through this clean energy transition, everything that you are using, for the most part, has a part of it that has been mined. So I am speaking into a microphone right now that is metal. That metal was mined. My phone has rare earth elements in it that are from many different companies. And to me, taking the challenges head on to be part of a sustainable mining environment, I think is a really, really unique opportunity. When I think about the backbone of sustainability and I think of who benefits from the clean energy transition, as a nerdy scientist, I go to the primary literature, I look at the papers that are out there. And there's been a lot of work in Bangladesh looking at who benefits from more electrification. And as I've mentioned a few times, copper is the backbone of electrification. So the communities that disproportionately benefit are children because they have access to healthcare, they live longer, and women because they have greater educational outcomes. So from that, we know that if there is better access to electricity around the world, women and children have better health and educational outcomes. Okay, that's cool. I know as someone who drives a car, uses metal, I try to use as few plastics as possible. So I like to use things like metal and like glass. The metal needs to be mined. So I know that mining plays a big role in that. And in terms of grid electrification, copper is the absolute backbone of that. I also am a big fan of domestic mining in the U.S. We've been partnering with some companies that are here in the U.S. And for me, there is an aspect of that where if you can see it in your backyard and you know that it's happening, you know that it's being done to United States standards. There's a lot of talk about domestic energy supply, domestic mining supply. I'm actually pretty proud of some of the environmental regulations that we have in the U.S. because I know what they are. When I order something online and it's coming from some unnamed country, I don't know where those raw materials came from. I don't necessarily know if child labor was used or if slavery was involved, but I do know the regulations that occur in the U.S. And I need and have come to terms with, as someone that grew up in Alaska, with seeing the environmental footprint and coming to terms with how I can keep pace with my own supply. I find it a balance and part of the conversation that needs to happen. And as a CEO of a company, it's also really empowering too to say, hey, my time is my most limited resource. It's the most limited thing we all have. What do I want to do with it? Do I want to be part of the solution where we can get more copper out, have fewer waste, and do it in a way that I can point to it and be very, very proud of? Yeah. I do want that. And we can use microbes, which have been around for billions of years in a way that no one else have thought of, combining these new technologies. That's something that helps me sleep at night and makes me feel very proud to be a part of.
So when you say you like working with mining companies, can you maybe give us some examples of both positive and maybe on the flip side, times when you've thought maybe they should be doing something better?
I can speak to my own personal experience, and all of the mining companies that we have worked with have shared our number one core value, which is safety. If you come into our office, we have two of them in Denver. Our number one core value is safety. If you go into our labs, you have to have full PPE. We have found that to be the case everywhere we go and everywhere we operate. Mining companies, just like a lot of other corporations, are under pressure to meet the demands of consumers. Doing that in a way that is both safe and responsible is something that is key from a corporate social responsibility perspective. And I can say that from a first-person perspective, I've actually been really, really impressed. I've worked in some other industries and haven't seen that across the board because those industries are not under the same level of scrutiny. We've also found mining companies, they need more copper. They want more copper. Us consumers, we need that copper. And finding ways to get that while minimizing the environmental footprint, we've seen it from our customers, is truly a win-win. It's actually been really invigorating. And as a team where we are driven by our values very much, they're on our website. We always tell everyone that we love safety, critical feedback, and snacks because we are a startup. It is something where we've had candid conversations too. If we ever do not feel like we are operating safely, we will walk away. And it has never been the case with mining companies.
But I think we're maybe blurring the line between your experience here and based in Denver and creating these microbes versus the hundreds of years of horrific practices from the mining industry, which still occur today. I mean, you talked about child slavery. So you mentioned that you haven't seen that maybe, but like, we know that that exists. There's child slavery that goes on in mining. I'm not saying that your partners are doing that, but it's not that far from a few years ago that they probably were. And then you also have indigenous people in some of the poorest parts on Earth who are seeing their land destroyed by the mining industry. So I don't see how you can look at it purely through a glass half full lens.
I can understand where that comes in. As someone who can speak to my experiences, I grew up in Alaska, and I have friends from a lot of Native villages that work at places like Red Dog Mine. There, I have found, speaking to many individuals who are members of Native communities, and right now we are a co-PI in the Alaska Critical Minerals Cooperative, where we work with the University of Alaska Anchorage and Fairbanks and some of the Native corporations up there to ensure that there is a proper premium on the land, and we are focused on responsible mineral extraction. One of my favorite quotes is, love locally, period. No, think globally, love locally. Like, I'm a big fan of the things I can control. And as someone who is at the head of a startup, as a CEO and founder of a startup, there's a lot of existential dread going on. There's a lot of things in the world I cannot control. My time is very limited, and the things I can control are how we develop a technology that can improve the global energy infrastructure and where we can deploy it. I can point to where we are deploying it, and I can be on site and say, yes, these companies are doing it better. To me, that's a net positive.
I'm fixing a hole where the rain gets in and stops my mind from wondering where it will go. I'm filling the cracks that ran through the door and kept my mind from wondering where it will go. And it really doesn't matter if I'm wrong, I'm right. Where I belong, I'm right. Where I belong. Silly people, they're standing there, they disagree, they never will. Wonder why they can't get past my door.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio, and I'm speaking to Liz Dennett. She's the founder and CEO of Endolith. So Liz, you're talking about what we can control and this existential dread that so many of us are feeling since the second Trump administration has rolled in. I see that on your website, you secured a Department of Energy grant to accelerate lithium for commercial deployment with industry partners. We keep hearing about all these government cuts from pick your department of the federal government, and those are on thin ice all of a sudden with these across-the-board cuts. How do you feel about being dependent on these kind of grants moving forward?
Thankfully, we have some great industry partners where we've been able to accelerate our field development timelines, and no core parts of our business are dependent on DOE grants. However, I have many friends and colleagues in the startup space that are not so fortunate. We have been able to accelerate our go-to-field and go-to-market endeavors and be able to accelerate our TRLs, our technology readiness levels, and our field deployment plans, which is, we're very fortunate to be able to do. And that's thanks to our customers and our investors.
Let's get back to the technology, if you will. Let's say I'm a miner and I come to you saying, I want to use your technology. What kind of numbers can you give me in terms of you're going to be getting X percent more copper because of using Endolith solution?
Yeah, Working with one of our customers, we found recovery of 1.7 to 1.9 times more recovery than without microbes. So almost twice as much copper recovery, which is fairly significant.
So that's just the volume of recovery. What about the timeline? Does that change as well?
Yeah, we actually are able to get the copper out faster. And speaking of numbers, I mentioned that we have a lot of copper we need before 2030. And one of the numbers that's frequently tossed around is we need about 50 million tons of copper. Just to put that in context, that is 600 million EVs or over 2,000 Olympic-sized swimming pools filled with copper. If you were to take that and turn it into wire, it would also go from here to the moon over 2,000 times. So even though some of these numbers might be a little esoteric, like, okay, we're getting about double as much copper out, when we think about the sheer amount that is needed and the fact that no existing technologies are able to close this gap, it is a massive, massive copper deficit that we're facing.
I was talking to some tech person who was talking about all these alternatives to copper. What does that landscape look like? And can Endolith's solution work for other metals beyond copper?
Our platform can work on a great number of metals and other elements, including things like nickel and iron. In terms of the conductivity landscape, copper is the best conductor that's a non-precious metal. So even though there's other ones out there that are better conductors, they're not cost effective. And when we think about global electrification, it can start to get expensive when we're looking at how much we need. And from the eyes of a global citizen, ensuring that everyone on the planet has access to that rising tide of global electrification that I spoke about earlier, we want to make sure we're doing it in a way that all citizens have access, not just those in developed countries.
So what are some of the alternative metals that you're excited about or that listeners should be aware of?
To me, it's not the metal so much, because anytime you're going to have to install a grid, there's so much capital expenditure that comes with that. One of the things I'm really excited about from just a technology development perspective is battery storage technologies, seeing the next and upcoming generation of batteries, of energy generation, ways that we can get more microgrids set up in mobile environments and places that are really, really out there so that we don't have to have power lines crisscrossing, and really empowering communities wherever they are globally to do solutions that fit for them. Because it's not a one size fits all. What works for my parents up in rural Alaska is not the same thing that's going to work for Denver, that's going to work for sub-Saharan Africa.
She's the CEO and founder of Endolith, Liz Dennett. Liz, thanks so much for being my guest on Sea Change Radio.
It was my pleasure. Thank you so much.
Sway the future to the past and find what will endure.
You've been listening to Sea Change Radio. Our intro music is by Sanford Lewis, and our outro music is by Alex Wise.
Additional music by Tom Freund and the Wood Brothers.
Check out our website at seachangeradio.com. That's seachangeradio.com to stream or download the show or subscribe to our podcast. Visit our archives there to hear from Bill McKibben, Van Jones, Paul Hawken, and many others. And tune in to Sea Change Radio next week as we continue making connections for sustainability. For Sea Change Radio, I'm Alex Wise.